Let's return to a story we've been covering on and off for quite a few years now, and that's the obvious fact that Donald is hardly the poster boy for Christianity. Thrice married Philandra, talked about dating his daughter, paid off a porn star to keep quiet about an affair, and certainly can't cite a single Bible verse. Yet in 2016 he earned over 80%. Of the white evangelical vote. That's more than George W., Mitt Romney or John McCain. So why does he enjoy, apparently still enjoy, the unwavering support, the veneration of white Christian evangelicals? Journalist Sarah Posner, the answer lies in the radical history of the modern religious right and underlying conditions that she warns will give rise to another Trump in the future. I think one's more than enough. Sarah has been covering the Christian right for well over a decade. Her latest book is Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. And we join now at that altar. Sarah, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Many see him as a divine leader, don't they? Chosen by God.
That's right. They believe that God has chosen Trump to lead America at this critical point in her history. So this critical point where America could go one way or another. It could go the way of secularism and Black Lives Matter and civil rights, or it could maintain its white Christian heritage, which they believe that Trump is doing for them.
What possesses God to choose the Donald, I wonder? But okay, there were some evangelical leaders who were skeptical of the Donald when he first started campaigning in 2015, but the base was pretty much enthralled by him. Why?
I think he spoke to their grievances about the direction in which the country had been going for the past, you know, 5 or 6 decades. And I think the showmanship of his rallies really appealed to the part of the Christian right that is very much enthralled by televangelism. And I think also they believed that other politicians had been too tepid, other Republicans and other Republican presidents had been too tepid in their support for white evangelical aspirations, and that Trump dispensed with all of that quote-unquote political correctness to just tell it like it is.
Sarah, you're the first guest to use the word tepid. I love it, and I thank you for it. But you also pointed out that Trump brings that deep-seated racism and sexism within the evangelical movement to the surface.
That's right. So today, I think most people think that the issue that brought white evangelicals into the conservative movement and into the Republican Party was abortion. But it wasn't. It was school desegregation. And so when you think about that in the context of Trump's racist grievances, his attempts, including last night, the attempts of many of the speakers at the Republican convention to portray the Democrats as, you know, bringing low-income people to the suburbs or trying to abolish the suburbs. He's trying to appeal to this idea that there are these white enclaves that are safe from, very clearly he's saying they're safe from Black people who are criminals, in his view.
It's interesting. And so it's not Roe versus Wade, it's Brown versus the Board of Education.
That's right. So after Brown, there were private schools that cropped up to avoid having to desegregate. They cropped up in towns where the public school or cities where those public schools were being desegregated. And these were called segregation academies. They were very explicitly designed to avoid desegregation. And at the same time, because of other changes that were taking place, like the Supreme Court striking down mandatory school prayer as unconstitutional and violating the separation of church and state, you saw all of these conditions driving the rise of Christian K through 12 schools, which became embroiled in a years-long battle with the Internal Revenue Service about whether they could maintain their tax-exempt status while having racially discriminatory policies. And this continues to hang over the religious right today. One of the famous cases from that time was when the Internal Revenue Service revoked the tax-exempt status of Bob Jones University, which is a college in South Carolina, a fundamentalist college, which claimed that its view of the Bible required the policy against interracial dating, banning interracial dating on its campus. And that case still hangs over the religious rights rhetoric about the government being at odds with their religious freedom, that the government bureaucrats coming to crack down on their religious freedom. And this is another reason why Trump has been so important to them. He's vowed not to do that. He's put their loyalists in top positions in the government. And so he is called by white evangelical leaders, and then this trickles down to the base at the grassroots, the most pro-religious freedom president in history.
Listeners to us will notice, Sarah, that both you and I are wearing black armbands because of the sad announcement about Jerry Falwell Jr. There's another unbroken tradition, isn't there, amongst evangelicals? And he'll be back. He'll be back. They always are.
Yes, the evangelical sex scandal, particularly when it involves a man, there's a straight man, I would add. There's always a comeback story. One of the figures that I write about in Unholy is Jim Baker, the televangelist from the 1980s, who fell from grace owing to a massive fraud that he committed on his followers and a sexual assault of his secretary.
He's my favorite televangelists. I'm glad you revived his memory.
It's not just his memory. He is back. He has a show. He has a complex in rural Missouri where his followers live and come to watch his show. People travel from everywhere to come watch his show be recorded in a television studio there. So here's an example of a comeback, and no doubt Jerry Falwell Jr. Is now planning his own comeback from redemption and comeback from this scandal that he's in the midst of right now.
Sarah, many of us in Australia found the televangelist Paula White to be, if you like, the apotheosis of terror. How did this first come about, her Trump's friendship with this extraordinary ratbag?
So the story that is told by both Paula White and many of the people around Trump and White is that Trump really likes channel surfing, and he likes watching Christian television. And back sometime in maybe the early 2000s, he stumbled upon Paula White's television program. And that particular program, she was discussing a sermon called The Value of Vision. And he was very taken with it. And as one Trump supporter told me, he really felt like she was talking about applying biblical values to business, and that really appealed to him as a businessman. And the way Paula White tells the story, he had his secretary call her up. And, you know, when she tells the story, she feigns disbelief that, you know, Mr. Trump was calling me. And they invited her to Trump Tower to meet him, and the rest is history, you know, that they became friends, that she provides him spiritual advice.
And ain't love grand, Sarah? I mean, isn't this wonderful? I think this is just a great story. Look, you've made the point that Reagan was a bit of a disappointment. Has the Donald delivered to the evangelical base?
The evangelical leadership that is close to Trump, along with their supporters in Congress and Trump supporters in Congress, have beaten the drum for the past 4 years that Trump is the most pro-life president in history. He's the most pro-religious freedom president in history. This is owing to his judicial appointments, including Supreme Court appointments, Justice Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. It's owing to his appointment of religious right loyalists in top positions in his administration, where they have implemented policies giving greater religious exemptions, say, to people who have a religious objection to serving LGBTQ people, or they've implemented more anti-choice, anti-reproductive rights policies. Or in the case of someone like Bill Barr, that he's intervened, the Department of Justice has intervened in cases where conservative Christians are arguing that a policy or a law violates their religious freedom. So he has delivered in ways that previous Republican presidents have not. And he's done it in very anti-democratic, small d ways. And I think that that is a feature, not a bug. That's something that they like about him.
Sarah, I've been a lifelong atheist until, well, the last 24 hours, but I've now converted to
Seen the light.
To Trumpian Christianity, and I'm praying that he's going to win. But what happens to the Christian right if he loses?
So if he loses, he is laying the groundwork for them to believe that some sort of deep state or demonic forces were out to get him, and that the election was rigged. And this just means that they need to redouble their efforts to support him and to bring down his successor, right? So everything in the past several decades of Republican and evangelical politics has been this back and forth, you know. So when Bill Clinton was in office, Jerry Falwell Sr. peddled all these conspiracy theories about him being a murderer and a rapist, and played a big role in the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And then you saw a backlash against Barack Obama because of his race, obviously, and evangelical Christians believed conspiracy theories about Barack Obama, that he wasn't born in the United States, that he wasn't a real American, that he was a secret Muslim, that he might be the Antichrist. And so you're going to see that cycle again if Joe Biden becomes president. Already you're seeing conspiracy theories that Kamala Harris might not be a real American, even though she was born in Oakland, California.
Well, you believe that. I refuse to accept that. Look, we've got to wind it up, Sarah, and I hope God forgives you for this book. Sarah Posner, a reporting fellow with Type Investigations, and we've been discussing her scandalous tome, Unholy, Why White Evangelicals Worship at the Altar of Donald Trump. Join me there. It's published by Random House. Oh, and I must recommend that you tune in to the Religion and Ethics Report on Wednesday at 5:30. Andrew West will be speaking to Kristen Cobestu-May, author of Jesus and John Wayne, How White Evangelicals Corrupted a Faith and Fractured a Nation. LNL on Radio National.